This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? Learn more about Wisconsin's cheese-making history at wisconsincheese.com.
Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over six episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus. It's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a sheep in the studio.
It did not sound anything like a sheep.
Bah! Welcome to Life's Banquet, the show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable with your hosts, Art and Gloria and
Nicole Bailey.
Nicole doesn't have a great singing voice. Just kidding.
You don't know that?
Do you?
Bitch.
Can you sing? Can you sing? Yes or no?
That is none of your business.
Prove it. Move it or lose it.
Please step.
Hi. You know what? We have so much to talk about today with our topic that I feel like we don't need to like engage in any kind of pleasantries.
Yeah, because this banter wasn't going very well. I was about to fight you.
Straight downhill. Straight down an icy hill on a pair of moccasins. Am I right, everybody?
Huh.
Moccasins are smooth on the bottom and ice is slippery.
Yes. But you shouldn't be wearing moccasins in any sort of damp situation.
That's true. The ice and water will go right through
unless you protected them with that spray.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. That's interesting because today's episode is all about moccasin protective spray.
Brought to you by...
Moccasin Shield! The number one moccasin water repellent. All right. I'm sorry.
And this episode is over.
And we have been fired. We've just gotten a... We just got, what do you call it when a plane flies over with a message?
Roberta herself came in here to Heritage Radio and has fired us.
Oh my God, I'm dying. Okay, what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about chain restaurants. And the reason we have to dive right in is because I got so excited in doing my research that I kept adding more and more and more to the point where I now have like 4 million and there's not going to be enough time. So we have to go. Okay. Are you ready?
To rumble.
For the spaghetti factory.
Oh, no! Not really. Ow, my ears hurt from laughing.
Oh, also, as per usual, of course, there are many, many chain restaurants on the planet, and I'm only picking ones that have a special meaning to me, so I will alienate all listeners. So, the spaghetti factory, it's actually, I thought it was ye old spaghetti factory, but it's the old spaghetti factory.
Mm-hmm. Incongruous.
It was started by, in 1969... in Portland, Oregon, by Gus and Sally Dussin.
That does not sound Italian.
I don't think it was Italian.
No, no.
Okay. Although, who knows?
Who's to say?
Maybe they are. Who knows?
Okay.
But the website is full of adorable pictures of them, like, just, like, starting the restaurant, them, like, hugging, and it's, like, the cutest freaking website that you could ever... You should just go there to have your heart warmed. They found a place and they decided to just like open a restaurant at first, and they decorated it with, you know, kind of old timey like antiques and chandeliers, and tried to make it look vintage, which, you know, in 1969 means they're talking about like the 30s probably. And they found an old abandoned boxcar in a field. They brought it into the restaurant and made that like a special seating area for guests.
That's
like,
so cool.
Like the coveted area is like this boxcar. And then so ever since then, they've had a boxcar in every single restaurant. And as a kid, I can remember wanting to sit in there because It's like in the center of the restaurant. Yeah. Everyone can see you, and it's really cool.
Did you ever get to do it?
Yeah, we went to the Spaghetti Factory quite a bit.
Oh, that's cool. That's all. I never heard of Spaghetti Factory. We did not have them on the East Coast, or at least not in Long Island.
I think that's true. Yeah. I think maybe it's more Midwestern and West Coast.
Sure.
Because it started in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is as far west as you can get.
And we ate there quite a bit. I actually love the old Spaghetti Factory. We went there last Christmas because we randomly decided to eat with my parents and my nephew at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. And like nothing was open. So we went to the old Spaghetti Factory, and it's like a kid place.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really put together until we walked in, and it was just like filled to the brim with like screaming children. It's like 2 days before Christmas. It was like the worst thing.
It sounds pleasant.
But then we got seated pretty quickly, and then we all had a great time.
Yeah, and then you smoked like a pack of cigarettes after you were done to like deal with the stress. What did you get?
I can't remember. I do. The two things that are the reasons why I love that place is you get bread with your meal, which mm-hmm. I love, and they have really good ranch dressing. So if you order any of the entrees, you get like a salad and a dessert that comes with your entree.
Oh, that's great.
So they have really good ranch dressing. It's like delicious. And they have Spumoni ice cream at the end. And the Spumoni is really good. And I don't think I ever would have eaten pistachio ice cream as a picky child if I hadn't eaten it at the old Spaghetti Factory. So it's just like, it's good. You know, it's actually like not very good, but in terms of like, you know, boxy, basic chain restaurant stuff, it's also very nostalgic. So
that's great.
What can you do? So
basically nothing.
Also, I do have one bad thing to say about them.
okay.
There's also an entree on their menu called the Nizithra cheese and brown butter pasta, which I always thought was exotic. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I'm like, it's kind of, you know, an intense recipe for like a chain restaurant. And it turns out that it's a family recipe and they weren't going to put it on the menu, but in order to get their liquor license, they had to add one more dish.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I know. So it's an old family recipe and it's the most popular dish on the menu apparently. And I never ordered it. I always got like the spaghetti pomodoro or something. The one issue that I had is when I was they used to have restaurants in Germany and they closed them because labor costs were too high. Because in Germany you have to pay people a living wage.
Right.
And I was like, should I start talking about how if you have to pay someone a living wage, you can't afford to run a profitable restaurant? But no, we shouldn't delve into that at this moment. But
let's keep it all positive. The Spumoni, the brown butter. Everybody's happy in the spaghetti town.
So I said it. Do your research. Come to your own conclusions. Goodbye. Okay. So then Chi Chi's was the next restaurant. It was probably my favorite restaurant as a child. They had amazing salsa, and I liked the salsa so much because it wasn't big chunks. It was pureed. It was bottomless. I loved all things bottomless.
Bottomless anything is good, especially bottomless chips and salsa.
I know. Yeah, and they came with your, they would basically, you would sit down and you would have chips and salsa immediately on your table. Yeah. And, they currently have restaurants in Belgium, United Arab Emirates, and Kuwait. Mm-hmm. All of the U.S. and Canadian restaurants closed, so they started in 1975. Marno McDermott, his wife, was nicknamed Chi Chi.
Aww.
And former Green Bay Packers player Max McGee opened a lovely little Mexican restaurant in Richfield, Minnesota. They had 210 locations in 1995. In 2001, they tried to trademark the word salsification, but they were denied. And that reminded me that on their menu or somewhere there was the declaration of salsification. Oh, and I have never forgotten that phrase.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Do you know what it said?
It was just like, who knows? It was just like on some part of the menu. And it's just a great phrase.
Yeah, no, it's top notch.
So I went there even as a child, of course, a lot. But then even as I was a high school student, like living in Indianapolis, would still go there with my friends all the time. It must have been fairly affordable. And I was a good teen who did not drink alcohol. So that makes everything cheaper. But eventually, I actually remember hearing about this, but it did not deter me. But they were struck down with the largest hepatitis A outbreak in U.S. history 4 people died and 660 people got sick in Pittsburgh.
No.
And they linked it back to green onions from one of the locations.
Just there? Like the green onions weren't anywhere else?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Maron.
Is it crazy that 660 people ate there, though? Congrats, guys.
Yeah, I mean, they were doing a lot of business. What is hepatitis A? What does it do to you? Do we know? It's liver? Sounds bad.
I don't know, honestly. You can die from it, apparently, so look out.
Yikes. Shit.
And so that was really bad news for them, and they closed shortly thereafter in 2004.
Yeah, that's hard to come back from.
And I was sad about that. I don't think it was 100% the hepatitis A, but it was a bunch of different... They were starting to, like...
Probably didn't help.
...do too hot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, sorry, Chi-Chi's, although I do miss you.
You can still get their salsa, though, in the supermarket.
It's not the same.
It's not?
No. I think they had fresh salsa. I mean, the other thing is like they made fresh salsa, sure, which is like for the 90s, crazy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the Ground Round, which was originally started in 1969 by Howard Johnson.
That's crazy. I need to stop you and just let you know that the Ground Round was one of my very favorite places as a kid.
It was? So,
yeah, I mean, chain restaurants in general. I'll jump in in a minute, but like with my dad, we went to every chain restaurant, like, I think sometimes people think, like, oh, you're a chef. You must, like, be... I do not turn my nose up at chain restaurants. I love them. I don't eat at them anymore, but my nostalgia and my love for chains are so deep, and Ground Round is one of my favorites.
I also, like, we would only go to chain restaurants. Like, it would never occur to my family to go to a non-chain restaurant. Like, that wasn't a thing that would happen.
I always went to chains with my dad because he was the manager of, like, he was the GM of kind of a really fancy country club in town.
Right.
And he... never wanted to run into a member plus he liked chain restaurants,
yeah,
you know, but he never wanted to run into a member at a restaurant like in town in fear
so
that
to
they
avoid
would
them
in fear mostly he said that they would try to buy him dinner.
Oh,
because he just like wasn't trying to have
male
that.
Pride
out with his daughter and like, oh, let me buy you dinner.
I'd be like, please buy me dinner.
Of fucking course you don't want to buy them to buy you dinner. But anyway, so we always went to chains and
cute.
I love them.
Cute.
It's so cute.
I was texting with my sister about this, but my memory of the Ground Round is that it was for kids. It was like there was a kids restaurant. I mean, for parents of kids, obviously, but we would go there all the time because it was pay what you weigh.
Oh yeah.
So you would get on the thing and they would weigh you.
That's embarrassing.
I know, because I already was struggling with my weight as a young child. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I weigh 72 pounds, but then I weighed, you know, 72 cents. So.
Yeah,
I would take my kid there right now. But they originally started it as a theme restaurant. Harkening back to our last episode, the original place had the converted bathtub with the sundae bar. I don't know if you remember that.
Uh-huh, yeah, of course.
And this is also part of a family inside joke. Is one time my mom went, she took us to the sundae bar and she was shaking up the like ready whip to put on my sundae and she accidentally just like sprayed it all over my sister.
Aww.
And it's just like something that we've never forgotten and we would laugh about all the time. And
so
my sister reminded, because I was like, what was that restaurant? Or I was like, do you remember this or something? And she was like, that place was so weird. And she was like, that's where, oh wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm conflating this with Max and Hermes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. But the Ground Round had, we're going to talk about Max and Hermes in just a second.
Perfect.
But the Ground Round had one of the first places where they would hand out peanuts.
Yeah, and they were all over the floor.
Peanut shells all over the floor.
Yeah,
which
but
is
they had a sundae bar, too, at Ground Round,
They had a sundae bar, but it wasn't in a bathtub.
It wasn't in a bathtub. Okay, got it.
And
a salad bar.
Did they have a salad bar?
I think so, yeah.
I also remember going there to, like, basically... as an adult or like an older like high school student maybe, and it was horrible.
I would go as an adult and I would get their this is really embarrassing, but their buffalo chicken salad to go.
Oh no, I used to get that from Chili's. Chili's used to have a buffalo chicken salad.
It was in my memory. I'm like eating it right now and it's delicious. I would take one right now.
The buffalo chicken salad,
we need to bring that back.
They do. One cute little thing that I read about the Ground Round before I move on is that they all of the corporate-owned ones closed. The franchise ones stayed open, and then the franchisees all banded together to buy the company.
Oh, wow.
So any Ground Rounds that are now working are, like, franchise-owned and operated.
That's awesome.
And that's really cute.
Yeah, that's great.
One of the rare cases with a chain restaurant.
Adorbs.
Okay, Maxidermis. I bet nobody even knows about this place unless they're from the Midwest, but it was a big part of me and my sister's childhood. It was started in, it's also, the story is pretty cute, started in Columbus, Ohio in 1972. They purchased a tavern in Germanville, which is in Columbus, which had been operated by Max and Irma since 1958. So they decided to take their name and leave it there. And they decided to make the theme restaurant. And they decided that their theme was going to be having a sundae in a bathtub. I don't really know what that theme is, but
yeah,
it's a very important part of my childhood.
That's so cute.
It's where my mom doused my sister in whipped cream. It's funny. And it's very hilarious. We were very into that sundae bar. It's like a build your own sundae bar situation. For some reason, it's in a bathtub.
That's very weird. That sounds like a kinky, like a weird kink of Max and Irma's.
Also, interestingly, Max and Irma's, I remember this, served their sodas in mason jars. So they were actually the first
trendsetters.
People to do that. Sure, not sure. Hipsters.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we need to go on to a little section, which is, it started off being Sizzler, but then I had to morph it into the all-you-can-eat salad bar steak restaurant.
Dude, so I love salad bar.
The first one that we know about is... Ooh, that. Hi. Sorry, the people outside are waving at us. But I can't
distracting.
Do we know them?
No, in the Heritage Radio Studios, just so you guys know, anyone who has never seen it, it's in Roberta's, and there's like a plexiglass window, and we're looking at all the diners. So sometimes they wave at us.
Yeah, and I...
It's I'm distracting.
Scared. I'm frightened. okay, so Sizzler started in 1958. It was originally Del Sizzler Family Steakhouse in Culver City. They sort of... I started reading about this, I'm like, wait, salad bar. Like, I want to know everything there is about it, but I didn't have enough time. So basically, the salad bar was just the add-on. So you would go there for a steak dinner, and like the perk was that you could get an all-you-can-eat salad bar for $9.99. Yeah. But very quickly, people just started eating the salad bar only.
Sure, why wouldn't you? It has everything.
I know. And so then Sizzler, as a result, lowered the quality of its menu items. People noticed there was a huge backlash, and that's kind of why they fell from grace and closed. I mean, they're still in California, but the Sizzler in my town is not there anymore.
Okay. They're not around.
In my hometown, we had a Ponderosa, which is actually... So Ponderosa and Bonanza rose up as their, like, biggest competitors.
Oh, wow.
Right, kind of, like, a couple of years after they opened. But then the whole, like, salad bar thing... changed. And so basically I read a bunch of articles that were like, the salad bar, and the salad bar has changed the way America eats salad, and it changed what a salad even means. And it's like really interesting. And actually, because I'm like, I grew up just like accepting that salad bars have always existed, but of course that's not true.
You're like a millennial with the internet.
Yeah.
Like, and there was a time before salad bars and there's a time after.
No, the salad bars still exist.
I know they do in a different way though.
And I just love the whole all you can eat culture. Mm-hmm. So as a kid growing up, we would go to a chain called Ryan's, which might just be Midwestern, who knows. But it was a steakhouse / all you can eat buffet. And then that's the other thing. It was an all-you-can-eat buffet. So there was, like, chicken and, like, weird, like, spaghetti. And I would always go and get, like, 14 helpings and then go to the dessert bar and get every single dessert. Mm-hmm. I was a fat kid, by the way.
Samesies. Me too.
There was also Old Country Buffet, Golden Corral.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. And, yeah, it just sort of changed. It was also just, like, a way for people that... didn't have a ton of money, but wanted to go out and sort of feel like they could, like, the idea of all you can eat for like $9 is amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
You
actually
can take your kids and like, you can like actually have a meal out. I remember when they changed the prices at Ryan's and my dad was mad because then they like raised the salad bar, all you can eat price way up because they realized people were just choosing that.
Right.
And, so it went up from, like, I don't know, like $12. And my dad was like, this is so expensive.
Yeah.
Which it kind of is.
It is expensive, but it's when people, also realize that, like, a salad could be 3,000 calories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all you can eat is really, it could be millions of calories.
I mean, I'm exactly the same. I remember there was a place that was not a chain in our town called the Steak Port. And they had us, because it was in Northport, so it was called Steak Port.
Oh, cute.
And they had a salad bar, and I just, like, was when it came time to like dressing down, I would be like blue cheese, French, Italian, mix them together
no
to make like a dressing reservoir.
Ew.
with every kind of thing.
Blue cheese and French dressing together?
Best. I would do it. If I still had a restaurant right now, I would call it the blue cheese French dressing experiment.
It's very
That's
long.
That's all I would make.
The sign outside would be very expensive.
It's true.
Okay, let's take it down to a darker level.
Oh, geez, Louise.
The Cracker Barrel.
No!
Well, I told you last episode that I had a fun story of white maleness and how no matter how many times you screw it up, they won't let you go down. Mm-hmm.
Failing upwards.
Failing right up to the top. Okay, so Cracker Barrel was started in 1969 in Lebanon, Tennessee, by a man named Dan Evans.
Oh, Danny E.
He was an executive at Shell, and he wanted a way for people to buy more gas. And so he decided to have a road, he decided to put his restaurants off the turn, off the exits.
Oh, how interesting.
And he formed it into the formation of the Country General store that he grew up with as a child. So, in his foggy white man, rich guy memory, this is what the General store was like.
Sure.
And he decided to have Southern cuisine. They actually had turnip greens on the early menus.
Wow.
I mean, it was the 60s, too. Yeah. So, and before I talk about the horrors, I used to go there all the time because they had all-you-can-eat. It's a theme here. They had all-you-can-eat biscuits and gravy for, $2.99. So you could go there and get literally all the biscuits and gravy that you could eat.
How many can you eat? How many plates is
possible? I can't really remember, but probably two. I definitely would always get a second one. And it was a basket of biscuits on the table too.
Oh wow.
And my friend and I would just go there to get the all you can eat biscuits and gravy.
Oh my god.
And have the grand old time.
That sounds great.
Drinking full sugar Coca-Cola.
Uh-huh. I've never been to a
throwing caution to the wind.
I've never been to a CB.
Oh, well, it's very strange because you walk into the general store part, so if you have to wait for your table, you kind of are just forced to be in this gift shop, which I was always super into. I bought probably way too many pennies inside of a glass bottle.
Isn't it funny? People buy almost anything.
Yeah. They also had this cool game with golf tees and a triangle where you had to there was only one space and you had to jump them over each other.
I know that game.
Which I very much enjoyed.
Yep.
However, the CEO, Dan Evans, in the early 90s, began to exhibit, he was obviously, we now know, always a huge monster, but in the 60s, it was fine for white dudes to be huge monsters. Mm-hmm. It was encouraged. So he made an official company policy prohibiting the hiring of anyone whose sexual preferences fail to demonstrate normal heterosexual values.
Wow.
That was a company policy.
Cool, Dan Evans. You
in
suck.
In the 90s.
In the 90s, yeah. It's fucking awesome. You're great. Just
so
kidding.
So they reversed the policy after backlash, but they didn't ask him to step down, Sarah.
Yeah, no, why would they?
They would. Why?
Why would they?
So he continued to be the CEO for the next 10 years. Nice. He had a reputation, was often in the news for publicly and privately encouraging the discrimination of minorities and women within his company.
Cool. Don't go to Cracker Barrel.
Well, you can now.
Okay. It's safe to go again.
But let me tell you why.
Okay.
I mean, you really probably shouldn't, because this is how they decided to get rid of him. So then, finally, in 2001, they were like, okay, you're so problematic, you can no longer be the CEO, so you have to step down.
Yeah.
And he was like, no problem. I'm not mad because I'm still the chairman of the board.
No.
And they're like, this is the best we can do.
Ugh.
And so he remains the chairman of the board.
No!
And then the next thing that they do is they finally decide to push a mandatory retirement age of 70 on all executives.
Okay.
Because Dan Evans was 69 and about to turn 70. So as soon as they passed that decree, he retired.
They pushed him out the door.
But they didn't push him out.
Right, and of course he's still a fucking millionaire, so it's big deal. He doesn't get to
also
eat
he
free
was
Cracker
already,
Barrel
he
all
was
the time.
A Shell Oil executive. So
boo,
this guy,
boo,
I mean,
boo.
Can you imagine? He's the perfect example of a monster man.
Yep, boo.
Yeah, and then, they froze his body and he's going to come back later when whatever those crazy frozen tech people are doing. I don't even know.
Yuck, he's frozen in a pile of gravy.
Hold on, I'm not done.
Okay.
Are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. I have two. Oh, wait. I just had to do one more because... Hold on. Sorry. I'm getting lost in my notes of all of our other podcasts. I have to do Bob Evans.
Okay.
Bob Evans was one of my favorite restaurants as a child also.
Wait, what was the guy we were just talking about? Dick Evans?
Dan Evans.
Okay.
No relation.
Okay.
Actually, he's spelled with an I anyway.
Oh, weird.
So Bob Evans was a restaurant that I would go to a lot as a child with my parents. And I always remember talking to my sister about it and being like, I would always... It was a restaurant for old people, but we would go there a lot. And so a bunch of old people would always be eating in there. And whenever I would see an old person eating alone, I would assume that their spouse had died and they were going there to remember their memories of eating there together. And I would almost,
no, it's
I would
sad.
Almost start crying just from seeing an old person eating alone.
Yeah. Well, you're an empath. That's very, that means yours was, you were a sweet child and you're a sweet adult.
Oh, I know. Yeah. So I was just like, I still remember that. But I also, so the menu had breakfast all day, which is a very important concept.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so I would order, and my mom would just let me order whatever I wanted. So I would order a regular Coke, pancakes, and french fries.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a starch-heavy meal.
Yeah.
That was my signature order. I would never order anything else there. Oh. And it was really good. They had really good pancakes.
Did you dip your french fries in syrup?
No, I don't get down like that.
Okay. Excuse us.
Also, Bob Evans is kind of a cute story because basically it's 1948. Bob Evans himself in Gallipolis, Ohio. That is how it's pronounced. I'm 90% sure because I remember that town from when I lived next door to it in Indiana. He had a little restaurant, and he started basically a farm-to-table situation where he started processing and packaging sausage from his own farm to put in his diner.
So whoa, that's awesome.
I know. So he did that in 1948. The reputation grew so big that people would come to the restaurant just to get the bulk orders because his sausage was so good.
Oh, that's rad.
And then things started even snowballing from there, and he was doing all the packaging himself. And he just, like, couldn't keep up with demand. So he actually had a cousin who worked in packaging and was like, help me out, Tim Evans.
Yeah.
And he was like, no problem, cuz. And so then he started packaging everything for him, which led them to have, like, you know. I think you can still buy Bob Evans sausage in the grocery store.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
But they moved their sausage, or they moved their little diner to an actual restaurant on the farm. And so it was... Oh. A cute little farm restaurant, which eventually became a major chain that was, like, family-owned until 2003, I think. And then the person who bought it, or the person who took over when the CEO stepped down, was, had been working closely with the family the entire time. So it was, like, a cute little family corporation, major conglomerate. It's probably not that cute anymore. But, yeah. Pancakes and french fries, breakfast all day.
Yum!
Good stuff.
That's amazing. Should we break it off for a break? Do you have one more?
No, I'm done.
You're done?
Yeah.
Should we take a quick break?
Yeah, let's break it
up. We'll refresh. We'll powder our noses. Wink, nudge. And we'll come back to this amazing chain of fools.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin has storied cheese history that begins with Swiss, German, and Italian settlers in the 1800s and continues today with nonstop innovation and award-winning artisanship. Wisconsin was the first state to establish cheese-grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. It is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of this helps Wisconsin cheese win more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country. Take, for example, Decatur Swiss Cheese Co-op, who have made cheese since the 1940s. Steve Stettler is a Wisconsin master cheesemaker who developed several new cheeses for the co-op, including a European-style Havarti, a Swiss lace cheese called Stettler Swiss, and a Colby Swiss marbled cheese. His cheeses have won awards at the Wisconsin State Fair and the World Championship Cheese Contest. To learn more about Wisconsin's award-winning cheesemakers, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Michael Harlan Turkel, and I'm the host of The Food Scene here on HRN. This show explores the intersection of food, art, and design by talking to people who are inspired by these ideas. The show features food photographers, food stylists, interior designers, and so much more. All the players that make the world so visually delicious. You can find the food scene wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, and we're back. And we are back from our break with a message from our sponsors. Mm-hmm. This show is brought to you by Chili's. Just kidding. It's definitely not. But I am talking about Chili's today because it's one of my favorite chains of all time. Same. I love two-for-one margaritas. I love sizzling fajitas.
They had two-for-one margaritas?
Yes. Yes, sir. So the company was founded by Larry Levine in Texas in 1975, but is currently owned by and operated by Brinker International. Again, going back to what we were talking about last week, everything's owned by like a conglomerate.
Totally.
Chili's was inspired by a Texas chili cook-off held in Terralingua, Texas in 1967, and they still have the Terralingua chili on the menu. If you go to Chili's, it's still called like their Terralingua chili.
I was just going to say, do they even have chili at Chili's?
Yeah, they do. Terralingua chili. Terralingua chili. The first location was in a converted postal station in Greenville Avenue in Vickery Meadows area of Dallas. And by the 1980s, there were 28 chili locations in the region, and they all had like a Southwest decor. In 83, he sold the restaurant to Brinker, who was a Pillsbury Restaurant Group executive. And today, Chili's has 1,600 locations worldwide. Now, to my favorite part of Chili's. Actually, my favorite, followed only by what I'm going to talk about next. The fajitas, or as my mom would say, fajitas with an R. In 1960, now a little bit about fajitas. In 1969, fajitas debuted on the menu at Otila Garza's Roundup Restaurant in the Rio Grande Valley community of Far. And then, moving forward, George Weidman was the opening chef at the Hyatt Regency in Austin in 1982, and he recognized the commercial potential of the popular Tex-Mex dish. He put sizzling fajitas, quote, on the menu of Hyatt's La Vista restaurant, and it made it the most profitable restaurant in the entire Hyatt chain. So then Weidman spent the last 20 years of his career at the Hyatt Austin and was often called upon to travel to other properties to share his fajita secrets with other restaurants in the chain, and they remain a restaurant mainstay for Hyatt. Isn't that interesting?
So they are the ones, I think, that made it so that you would, they put them in that cast iron thing.
Exactly.
And you walk through the restaurant and with it's this. Like, and so that everyone hears it and wants to order it. It's like an actual, like, brilliant.
It's a brilliant idea, right? Like, yeah. It also makes everybody smell like fajitas when they leave.
Yeah.
But it's fine. But it was a very, like, I mean, I guess it came to be in the 80s, but to me, I'll always be reminded of it in, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
And so then they added to the menu Chili's, and it became, like, a huge part of, like, Chili's. So prior to the introduction of the fajitas in 1984, 2 years after this guy introduced it to the Hyatt, all menus at Chili's, except for the chili, were served in baskets. And then when they got the fajitas, special equipment like skillets and tortilla warmers were introduced into the kitchen to prepare the fajitas, which caused a, quote, uproar, according to the company. So people were mad pissed. They're like, what am I going to do with this blazing lava hot fucking cast iron skillet? I have to walk through the dining room. People are like, should I touch it?
To be fair, it is freaking dangerous.
Crazy. It's crazed. If you like had no, if you had never been privy to that, you'd be like, what the hell is
this? You can't put that near a toddler or a child that's going to just like grab it and burn their little tiny hand off.
I know.
And the servers have to carry.
It's smoke. It's very exciting though. Is it the most exciting dish in Hollywood?
No, I was never into it.
You weren't? Would you eat one right now? You make your own taco.
Yeah, at the time I wasn't super into vegetables, especially not onions.
Peppers and onions.
Freaking peppers.
And mushrooms.
And steak.
Like, and steak. It's all the things you don't like.
Absolutely not.
And you don't like shrimp. So really you were just left with the option of like plain chicken and guacamole.
Yeah, or I ate my own things at Chili's, which I'll talk about later.
Okay.
We're done talking about Chili's.
Cool. I love Chili's. They also had the classic, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back. Chili's baby back ribs.
No.
Barbecue sauce.
Oh. I forgot about that part.
The most legendary casual dining chain.
What year was that?
Of all time. I think it came out in the, let's see.
It's
the
90s.
It's definitely, maybe in like the early 90s. It doesn't say here when it first came out, actually. I mean, I'm sure there's a way to look it up, but I just didn't care. So I think in maybe like the early 90s, and they revamped it in like 1996. So it was like, the song was called Welcome to Chili's, and it was written by Guy Bamarato. And the producer was Tom Faulkner, and he sang the melodic theme. I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. And the New York singer named Willie McCoy was brought, he brought the barbecue sauce. He did the, like, and then there was a duo-up
Wait, quartet. The barbecue sauce guy is different from the baby back guy?
Separate guy.
What about the Chili's baby back ribs? That guy.
Chili's. Different guy? That's Tom Faulkner.
Oh, that's all, okay.
Yeah, so. It's three people. One wrote it. It's two people plus a doo-wop quartet.
This is Hollywood fantasy dreams come true.
It really is. Somebody should make a biopic. So the guy who wrote it has apparently never eaten Chili's ribs. Now the guy who did the barbecue sauce.
Lost my headphones because I was laughing so hard.
The guy who did the barbecue sauce named Willie McCoy, passed away in 2013. Now please hold on to your butts for this. His pallbearers were dressed as chefs and sang the jingle as they carried the casket.
Oh my God, that just gave me chills.
Wait, the casket itself was designed to look like a smoker. Fake baby back ribs were carried in by dancers.
Wow.
And a barbecue sauce fountain was installed.
No.
And live pigs were present.
Live pigs were there?
Live pigs were there.
Why?
I don't know. To witness what their own funeral might look like? I have no idea. And then the funeral was televised on a short-lived TLC reality show.
That is what their funeral would look like.
TLC reality show called The Best Funeral Ever.
That's a fucking reality show?
What a fiasco!
Best
funeral ever.
Oh.
Featuring a man in a smoker smothered in barbecue sauce.
There's a barbecue sauce fountain, which I bet some poor soul was like, this is a chocolate fountain, and they were sadly.
I know. Sadly, I know. They're like, it's the spiciest chocolate I've ever had. I hate my life. Okay, in every Chili's restaurant, there's an upside down picture of the restaurant. I don't know why.
Huh.
Customers consume about 60.4 million pounds of fajita meat every.
Fajita meat? Like.
Or fajita meat. As I think Breton said that his parents used this. His mom used to say fajita or fajita, which sounds like a lot like vagina.
People in my family used to say Japolino instead of jalapeno.
My mom says everything wrong. She says Carichi Khan instead of Cornichon, which always reminded me of some kind of like gorilla pickle army. In the Rainforest Cafe. And every year, roughly 20,000 miles of baby back ribs are gobbled up. Selena Gomez is a fan.
Huh.
And that is it.
You know who else is a fan? It's Christina Aguilera.
Oh, and also this guy right here.
Artichoke dip.
Oh, my God. The artichoke dip is great. The 2-for-1 margs are great.
So
queso.
Here's...
What do you like?
So my sister and I used to always go to Chili's for Christmas when we go home. We would go to the one in the mall. But we went back, the last time we went back, we were kind of disappointed. So we decided to, there's another couple of chain restaurants in Indianapolis that I'll shout out at the end.
Okay, perfect.
I also just realized I did forget one that I'll have to shortly, very quickly tell you
what
about.
What is it?
But let me just tell you about Chili's first. They have a really, really good black bean burger. Like,
oh, really?
Their black bean burger is probably one of my favorite, like, chain, you know, like, just veggie burger that you get at like a chain kind of a place.
Mm-hmm.
The Applebee's one is like an actual garden burger, which is totally fine. I like that too. But their black bean burger is delicious. They also have bottomless chips and salsa, which is
They do.
My favorite thing. So we would get the bottomless chips and salsa, eat ourselves to death, and then our food would come, which included a pile of french fries.
I like their boneless buffalo wings.
Oh yeah, those are really good too.
I like a Southwest chicken salad. I like a tortilla soup. I tried Darling Jeet, bless his heart, our producer in the box right now. I asked him if he would print the menu for us before, and then I looked and realized it was over 85 pages long. So
yeah,
I
they
just have
like
to reference
tons
it from memory.
Of shit. They also have like the low calorie menu.
Yeah, they have
like
the hipster millennial menu, which they just dropped in 2017.
Is it called that?
No, but it was like geared towards millennials, and it like made sales drop like a dramatic percent, like something like 5% or something. And it was like they had they introduced like quinoa and kale, and it's like, listen. Not everyone has to do that, right?
Well,
like,
also, millennial is a meaningless word at this
totally.
Point.
Totally. It's a garbage word. Like,
it's the
organic.
Same thing as hipster. That doesn't actually mean anything
anymore. It's
nothing.
Anymore. Yeah. But anyway, they had quinoa, and now they're like, we don't need quinoa.
Let me just really quickly plug Burger Chef, which because I was like, I had to find out if there were any chain restaurants started in Indianapolis. And there was one, and it's now defunct, but had a great reign. It was started in Indianapolis in 1954 when they patented the flame broiler.
Oh, wow.
And then they opened Burger Chef the next year. In 1972, they had 1,200 locations in the country, which at that point...
Wow, that's a lot.
I know. At that point, McDonald's had 1,600.
Like, wow, that's crazy.
They were like the second competitor to McDonald's. Their mascots were Burger Chef and Jeff.
Who's Jeff? His lover?
No, Jeff is his...
Jeff's his friend that just stays over a lot?
Young boy. He's like the kid menu guy.
Okay.
It was the 70s. It was fine.
Uh-huh.
And Burger Chef was voiced by Paul Winchell, who is like a famous man.
I don't know him.
Me either.
call us.
They had something called the Fun Burger and the Fun Meal, and they had all these characters for kids. And then McDonald's came out with the Happy Meal, which completely ripped off their deal. Aww. They sued and they lost. So that was sort of like the beginning of the end. Eventually, a lot of them closed or were converted to Hardee's. So, yeah. The only thing I can say about Hardee's is that they did used to have, when I was a kid, the Slimer Sundae, which was a sundae.
It sounds delicious.
Green syrup on top of it for Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah. I remember Ecto Cooler. That was good.
Totally.
Yeah. I like spooky haunted mass-produced treats.
Yeah.
Those are the only two that are coming to mind right now. But amazing. So what are we going to talk? Chef recommends how to make your own chain restaurant thing at home.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to think of this, but on the way here, I used to work at Pizza Hut, proud Pizza Hut employee for all of my high school and first year of college.
Awesome.
While I was in high school, they came up with something called the Big New Yorker, which is like supposed to be an approximation of a New York pizza slice. But it was just like a really big pizza, and it had its own special sauce, which was really sweet. And I was obsessed with it. So I would always order pizza from Pizza Hut after that and be like, put sweet sauce on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like pro tip because I knew that I worked there. I knew all the different sauces. They all just came in a bag frozen for the record, but, but they were good. And so I think the first time I started like making pizza on my own, which I was really into for a while, I would make quick bread crust though, cause I had no patience for yeast.
Yeah.
Was I would try to make a pizza sauce that was really sweet, like that memory of it. And, I would make pizza when we would go, my sister and I would go home for Christmas, and I would make a whole pizza sauce myself. It would always be too thin, and then it would always bubble over and overwhelm the pizza, and I would be happy, and everyone's like, there's too much sauce on here.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm like, what do you mean? It's so good. So that was my chain restaurant thing that I tried to make in real life.
That's so cute. I actually, okay, one, I like extra sauce, and I also like a sweet sauce. So I'm totally with you on that. We're pizza, like, kinfolk.
Mm-hmm.
My tip is also pizza related and sweet sauce related. When I was in 10th grade, it must have been, I had a boyfriend, Eric Pradas. He was very sweet, nice guy. And one of the first things I think I ever cooked for anyone, and like, actually the first thing I ever cooked for anyone was for my mom. And it was modeled after the TGI Fridays Asian chicken salad.
You told me this.
Loved it. It was good. I'm like, oh my God, I can cook.
Didn't you also make like honey mustard chicken strips or something?
This was, no. I made that, like the Asian chicken salad, like wonton strips, and I made two dressings. And it was like when I realized that, I'm like, I think I know kind of how to cook. And then a couple years later, I made this barbecue chicken pizza for my boyfriend at the time that was modeled after the California Pizza Kitchen pizza. And I don't know if he liked it. Actually, no, I think it was barbecued steak, and the other thing was, like, a chicken. It was gross, probably.
Barbecue chicken pizza is, in my opinion, an abomination.
Yeah, agreed. I'm really, you know me, I'm, like, a plain slice. Like, if I'm really going to push my limitations, I'll do, like, pepperoni.
I think that the problem, I think about this a lot because it's a very contentious issue, is maybe the idea that you're taking barbecue chicken and covering it in cheese.
Like, yeah.
Why?
It's unnecessary.
You would never do that.
You just don't have to make everything into a pizza. Pizza can be pizza.
Leave pizza.
And then barbecue chicken could be like something else. Or do whatever you want. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really matter that much to me. But nowadays,
I know, but what if someone came to surprise you for your birthday party and there was only barbecue chicken pizza there?
I would tell them I never wanted to see them again.
Exactly. So, like, it does matter.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Don't try to push this under
the
rug.
That's true. I'd be like, you know what? I have to start setting more, like, serious emotional boundaries.
Yes.
So, what are your top three favorite chain restaurants of all time?
So this is my chance to shout out Yats, which is a chain restaurant within Indianapolis. I'm pretty sure they have
Yats.
I'm pretty sure they haven't expanded outside of Indiana, but I could be wrong. It's Cajun Creole, like New Orleans style food.
Okay.
But it's just a little business which has grown so much in probably like the last 10 years, I think.
Yes!
They have just like big one pot kind of things, like gumbos and like whatever. And I had really never eaten that kind of food. And it was just like cheap and you could get a whole plate for like $6. At one point, the prices have gone up a little bit, obviously, because of inflation.
Sure.
They have like 30 different hot sauces there, some in jars, some they make themselves. And they have this like garlic oil bread that comes with everything. And my favorite thing there is caramelized beans and corn.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It's so good that it's almost never there when I want it. But yes. My sister and I always try to go there. And we always try to bring something home for my dad. And he's like, I hate this.
He hates yats?
He doesn't like anything spicy or too mushy. So
a monster.
Everything there is like a, you know, a stew kind of thing. Right, so he's like, no, thank you.
Yeah. Pass on the yats. What's your number two?
Number two is, I think, you know, as I was walking down memory lane, I do love the old Spaghetti Factory. I probably wouldn't, like, go there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I would. It's, like, a fun, weird place. It's also still, like, remarkably affordable, which is something that I admire.
I'd love to check it out.
And I feel like right now Chili's is still in my heart because it's an important part of me and my sister's, like, you know, we hated each other for a while, and then we started, like, growing back together, and then it became a thing that we would go to the mall at Christmas and, you know, escape from home and be like, let's go to Chili's and just eat 4 million pounds of food.
Yeah.
And then hobble our way back to the car and be like, why did we do this?
I love Chili's, too. There was one in, like, the Sears Mall, like, when I was in high school, and they would, like, not ID us, and we'd get two-for-one margaritas, and I remember getting, like, very sick from there, like, alcohol poisoning one time. My mom's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I think I ate about shrimp and chilies.
I mean, those margaritas are really big.
Yeah, they're big. They're in mugs. They're, yeah.
I actually didn't really, we never really drank there. Mm-hmm. It was just like all about eating huge amounts of food.
Lots of
all cheese, you can eat.
Salt. Yeah, lots of it. I was big into like either like a Houlihan's or a Bennigan's. In my mind, they're kind of the same.
Yeah. Houlihan's is something, I think I almost worked at a Houlihan's one time.
Yeah. It seems like it would be kind of fun to work at, get to all that flair.
Yeah, totally.
So like Houlihan's, Bennigan's are kind of like tied for number three. Number two, Fridays, because like my dad and I went there so often, and that was
I wish we would have done that, because like why does that exist? Like why is the kitsch?
It's like Fridays specifically, but they're all offshoot, like kind of replicas of what used to be called fern bars.
Fern bars.
Fern bars were a kind of bar that had like lots of ferns and like lots of like started by Zach Galifianakis.
Weird.
And they used to just have like lots of kitsch, and they were like 70s, and so Fridays
a bunch
was,
of
like,
junk.
Someone was like, I have too much shit in my garage. Let's put it in the restaurant. And then it was like, a fern bar is born. So that's what Fridays came from. I loved Fridays. They had everything you could want from a chain restaurant. They were perfect. They were cute. They were fun. They were kitschy. When I talk about chain restaurants, it so brings me back to spending time with my dad. It's like unbelievable.
We just like didn't ever go to Fridays. Wasn't in our rotation as a family.
Right.
So the only thing I remember from Fridays is like being old enough to finally drink and then getting the mudslide.
Mudslide.
Which is
sure.
just like a boozy milkshake, it's which like, I now am morally opposed to.
Couldn't agree more. And my number one forever and always have been dying to go for so long. They have one in New York. Houston's.
Oh, right.
That's a classy chain.
I've never been to Houston's. I don't think there's one in Indiana. Yeah.
We got to go. There's one in New York on, like, Park Avenue in, like, where, I don't know, some kind of, like, Park Ave and 23rd Street or something.
So there's a really amazing long-form article about Houston's. I can't remember if it's in Vanity Fair or
something. It's in Bon Appetit. Andrew Knowlton wrote it.
Yeah, and I love it. The story of it's so fascinating and beautiful and, like, really heartwarming.
It's good.
The way they treat the staff so well is obviously something that nobody does anymore. And, yeah, you and I have talked about this. The reason I read that article is because you... Or something was going on with them. Why did I read that article?
I think I might have just, like... told you to read. I love Houston's.
Yeah.
Always grew up going there in New York and Florida. We'd always go with my grandmother. They have delicious salads, like everything's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
I really want to go back. Like,
yeah.
We need to go.
They have a spin dip.
Oh, their spin dip that comes with sour cream and salsa and spin and perfect chips. It's really good. I Of course, love their giant entree.
Yeah.
A ubiquitous Asian chicken salad.
Right. You love that one.
Tortilla strips in it. It's the most satisfying. It's probably my favorite thing. It's probably my last meal. I haven't had it in 20 years, but I would love that.
We should definitely go there.
Let's go.
It's totally my kind of place. It's going to be so expensive, though. It's a one-off.
We'll have to meet new boyfriends. We'll have to dress. This is a terrible thing to even say. It makes no sense in 2019. I'm like, we'll have to dress sexy and get some Wall Street guys to buy us dinner, which just sounds so terrible. It's a joke, but it doesn't even really work as a joke.
It's not funny anymore.
It's not funny at all. It's terrible. We'll have to just use our own money and buy spinach and artichoke dip.
We'll have to start a corporation.
Exactly. This was a really good, fun episode.
Yes. I had to speed through all that. Also, Burger Chef, I wish that you had been around when I was able to eat you.
Oh, call us up, Burger Chef. We'll help you get it. A relaunch guy.
I mean, they invented the flame broiler, so you have them to thank for everything that you eat.
I'm thinking of a flamethrower.
No, it's the flame broiled Burger King hamburger.
I know. When you say flame broiler, all I can think is that scene in whatchamacallit, that last Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
when
DiCaprio is using the flamethrower.
Interestingly, Tesla, that company sold flamethrowers.
Really?
Anyway, that's totally going off topic. But
that's another episode.
Listen to an episode of How Did This Get Made about that.
Oh my God.
I was like, what? I don't understand the world, man.
Great podcast. How Did This Get Made? Yes. All right. Well, that's it for us. I hope you had a good time. Hasta la pasta, Nicole.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.